The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of Communication Studies, is Professor Jason Roach.
It is my great pleasure and honor to be here with you today, Matt.
Excellent. I like your color scheme, by the way. It's very Tigers.
Thanks, yes.
Orange and blue. I can dig it. I can dig it. And how are you doing post-nuptials? Everything is, great?
Everything is great.
Life is beautiful?
Life is a honeymoon.
That is literally, right?
I mean, yes.
Wait, did you guys go somewhere? I forgot to ask a long time ago.
We did. We went to Myrtle Beach and then to the Smoky Mountains National Park.
Wow, very cool. Did some hiking?
Did some hiking, saw some bears.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Yep. Any other crazy animals?
No venison.
Par with sandwiches, did you?
No.
Some loon did that, and he had a convertible.
Oh, no.
Lured that, wanted to take a picture of the bear in the car. Got the bear in the car with sandwiches, then closed the door. Well, the bear was going to get out. After destroying all the upholstery and the top, the bear came out.
Okay. Nice.
I'm just wondering what the car insurance report looked like.
Wow. So you guys backpacked with a picnic basket and had a lot of fun at a national park. Cool.
We did.
Very cool. I bet you had some pretty beautiful pictures from Smoky Mountains at this time
of year.
I've
got a cell phone full of them that I can show you.
Can you show our viewers right now?
Yes, it's this one right here that I'm holding up by the microphone.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Wonderful. Sunrise. Professor Dave Chow is here from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Can I ask what you're illustrating?
I was just going to draw Quasimodo ringing the bells.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's a common motif with the clock tower chimes.
I have no idea.
Time.
You know me, I draw everywhere, any chance. So.
I was going to say to our next guest, who of course is guest panelist, Professor Pam Zarkowski, who is the Vice President for Academic Affairs and Provost, that I was kind of jealous about Marquette having a whole carillon that could play songs on their campus, and we just have like gong, gong.
Well, and I'll just remind all our listeners that Matt and I were visiting Marquette University with some other individuals, including the president of the university, the last 2 days. And that's because we're classic and we just are simple and unique. And
that
we
is
don't,
right.
You know,
low
we don't,
tech.
We
low
don't,
tech.
Yeah, very, very low tech. Don't want to overpower anybody. And that's the way it is. Go Titans.
Yeah. I kind of got jealous because I was like, we could play some songs or something. You know, there could be some sort of in joke that.
Like,
you know,
what? Inagata DeVita?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe they could play our alma mater.
Yeah, sure.
Oh,
yes.
We have one of those?
Yes. Written by Matt.
One of the authors is sitting around this table.
It's the Carillon Day.
And we're getting petitions every day to bring that back to commencement.
Oh, sure you are. Sure you are. Professor Jim Tubbs is here.
Howdy.
From the Department of Religious Studies. How are you doing, Jim?
Good. Good to see you again.
Excellent. Excellent. Good to see you, too. Are you teaching this summer, Jim?
No, just doing administrative work.
Lucky guy. Because you're still chair.
Yes, you too. You more than me.
You seem to run into a lot of people these days. High school, middle school, you know, even university. Like, oh, you teach, you know, so what's it like to have a couple months off? You're like,
off is a relative term.
Yes. My brain is doing all sorts of crazy things, even right now. Continuing around the table, Professor Diane Manica is here from the Department of Education for at least another few days.
Yeah. And I'm not teaching and I'm not doing any administrative work.
You're just working.
I'm vacationing. You got it.
Ready for the snakes.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's fantastic.
There's a big golf tournament this weekend, isn't there? So you was, yeah. Yes, so you can watch it.
Oh, yeah.
But get some pointers. I want to play, not watch.
Soon enough.
The windmills.
Soon enough.
U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the U.S. Open. We had two conversations going on here, as usual.
It's tough.
So.
It's tough.
The answers to both
in
were yes.
North Carolina, in Pinehurst.
That's your enemy, isn't it?
I was born in South Carolina. I was raised in North Carolina.
Oh, sorry. No.
That's your
it's
enemy.
Much like Venice.
And Vienna.
Yes.
And Vienna.
Where is East Virginia? Professor Dan Maggio is here.
East Virginia?
It would make sense, right? That's,
I don't know. Let's ask Eric Cantor.
Yeah. No, he's Central Virginia. No more.
Oh, my. Wow.
Seventh District.
How you doing? From the First Organization. First Lego League. So what is it? Is the First Organization bigger than just the Lego League?
We're four programs. First Lego League is one of the four. And this is for 9 to 14-year-olds, middle school,
So what else besides that?
We have a junior First Lego League. Then we have First Tech Challenge, which is 7th through 12th. And then we have our high school program, which is 9th through 12th.
Okay.
So, if you see stuff on TV, it's most likely the high school FRC program.
So you don't have a senior group yet or anything?
No, but they try to get a college program going. Oh. That'll be grassroots, not anything I don't think we would ever sponsor.
Sure.
We're stretched thin.
Are you affiliated at all with the Lego Corporation?
No. And I am not selling product. I am not on commission.
Right.
It's an alliance between FIRST, which is a nonprofit in the U.S., and obviously the Lego Group. So I do work with some folks from Lego every once in a while.
Pam, we've asked
Dan for discounts all the time.
Oh, yeah,
I was at a store that had all these minifigs, and it had the whole Simpsons, and I took a picture, and I sent it to you. I'm like, jealous?
Oh, no. I don't know if I got it.
But it bounced back like it didn't go through. I'll show it to you.
Okay. After the show. Check it out. That, and then we'll update on the hiking. Okay. It's on the to-do list here. But I cannot forget to introduce Professor Chuck Hokett, who, again, we still have AV needs during the summer, right?
We have some, yes. And it's great to be here, Matt.
Oh, it's
fantastic.
We're glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm hoping that the Tigers put together a win for you tonight.
They have
Chuck.
To.
That would be nice.
They have to. Yeah.
16 of 21 is not cutting it for anybody. Losses, that is. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. And if you stump the panel, you can win one of our autograph photograph prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win one of our autograph photograph prizes. You can send these questions to us in really just a handful of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. And what the heck, can announce very, very soon we're going to have our own Twitter account where you can send us question by question, all sorts of fun stuff, and we're going to have a Twitter-only show sometime this fall or winter. So stay tuned to that. And whatever you do, don't search for the hashtag AskTheProfessor on Twitter because you will find things you will not like. We are going into a set of questions that were written by Vivian Dix. We know our guest, Dr. Pam Zarkowski, is interested in both dentistry and law based on her background, and these things are at the interface of those. Pam, I think you'll know this one if our panel doesn't. The body that was found to be incinerated and the teeth can still be identified. What substance allows teeth to survive those extreme temperatures?
Enamel?
Yes, it's enamel.
Would you like me to spell that, or are we good?
No,
okay.
Can you use it in a sentence? Oh, my gosh. Yes, very well done. Enamel, absolutely. Forensic dentistry, we have some questions here. Who is credited with making the earliest recorded case of dental identification?
Paul Revere.
It's not Paul Revere. It's not what it says here.
That with such confidence.
I thought it was it.
A lot of
confidence. Oh, wow.
You're very impressed.
Hint number one. The identifier lived around 14 to 59 AD in ancient Rome. The identifier was married to Emperor Claudius. The identifier ordered the soldiers to kill Claudius's mistresses and bring their heads as proof of their death. According to history, this was Agrippina, Claudius's fourth wife, who looked for a discolored tooth in the mouth of the mistress to make sure they had killed the right woman.
Didn't she end up poisoning him, too, or isn't assumed to be the case?
That sounds about right.
Happy-go-lucky person.
Was Game of Thrones based on that?
Something like that. Yeah, absolutely. According to legend, to whom is the first use of bite mark identification attributed?
Anglo-Saxon...
you're actually not too far off. We're talking about those days. How does 1066 sound?
William the Conqueror?
It was William the Conqueror. He secured his mail with sealing wax with his bite mark on it. Since his teeth were horribly misaligned since his youth, they were an easily identifiable pattern. So you know which letters were real and which weren't.
Wow.
Why don't we do that these days? Hold on. I got to send someone to Chuck.
Please send your Ask the Professor questions with your real bite marks on.
Yes. No, on the verifying your
bite will get an autograph picture. Yes, yes. With bite marks. Yes.
That is a brilliant idea.
We should all bite mark. Yeah.
Yeah. And give it to Vivian.
So we'll get a little bit deeper in this one because I think that Pam has already answered it. A silversmith and practicing dentist who allegedly made the first documented forensic dental ID in America. That was Paul Revere.
I didn't know he was a practicing dentist.
Yeah.
It was more of a guild model. So, you know,
Yeah,
it's kind of like the Sam Drucker model. You know, it's like postmaster, the general store, you know.
If you were the barber, you were the surgeon.
Exactly.
Pam, it says here he provided silver and ivory dental bridges for a certain person who was one of Washington's generals who was killed at the Battle of Bunker Hill and buried unmarked, unfortunately. A year later, Revere was able to identify the general based on the work that he did. Do you remember who it was?
The general?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't.
It says Dr. Joseph Warren. And they dug up the corpse, and they could tell what was going on based on the dental work.
And kept the silver.
Yep. Exactly. Silver-tongued. Did he actually have a silver tongue, or was he just a really good speaker? One infamous serial killer was identified by the bite marks he left on his victims.
Bundy.
Yes, Ted Bundy. Okay. On their backsides, it politely states here. That sounds like Vivian. Yes, on their backsides. Very well done, Provost Zarkowski.
I try.
We have another set of questions here, profs. I recently visited the Getty Museum here in L.A. If you're ever in L.A., I'd like to encourage you to visit it. Though I've lived in Los Angeles nearly my entire life, this is the first time I've ever gone. The artwork and grounds are incredible. And admission is free, so even college professors can afford to
They get you with the parking.
Yes, they do. That's,
yes.
When I went to the Getty last month, Jackson Pollock's gigantic, in quotes, mural, I'm assuming a mural, but its title is Mural, was on display. This, of course, inspired me to send you questions about Pollock. There are 15 questions. Passing score is 80. However, I will feel personally satisfied if I'm able to stump you on even one. Sincerely, Alan Ira of Woodland Hills, California.
Oh, I think you're going to be real satisfied.
Oh, boy.
Send the picture now, right? Yeah. Send the picture now.
Going to be ecstatic. Oh, boy.
Okay, what was the name of the high school in Echo Park, California that Pollock attended? He was eventually expelled from high school for fighting.
Echo Park High School.
Yeah. Very well done.
No, nice.
Manual Arts High
Manual
School.
Manual Arts.
E-L or A-L?
No, actually it says manual as in using your hands. It's kind of interesting. Somebody just used their hands to tell me that we need to take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
From the Department of Performing Arts and Theater, Professor Arthur Beer.
How'd you do, Edwin?
See, who is he today?
I'll just read a lovely article about Australia.
Professor Arthur Beer from the Department of Theater and Performing Arts was a regular on Ask the Professor from 1988 to 1999. Arthur still makes guest appearances on the show from time to time, and he always seems to come up with a different character voice when greeting the listeners at the start of the show.
From the Department of Theater and Performing Arts, Professor Arthur Beer.
How do you do?
Now, Arthur wasn't the only Ask the Professor panelist known for his impersonations. You see, one day the late Professor George Pickering was a little tardy in getting to the studio, so somebody had to at least try to fill in for him.
On my right, from the Department of History and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts, Professor Kathy Bush.
Hello, Edwin. Aren't you going to introduce George?
Oh, yes. I forgot about George.
How could you ever?
I don't know. George Pickering.
Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to be here. As always.
As always, yeah. Okay. Thank you for filling in for George, yes. On Kathy's right, also from the Department of History, Professor Greg Sumner.
Hi, Edwin. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. And on Greg's right, from the Department of Theater and Performing Arts, Professor Arthur Beer.
Hi, Edwin.
Hello, Arthur. And entering the room right now from the Department of Religious Studies, the chair of that department.
He's already been introduced.
Professor George Pickering.
Oh, pleasure to be here, as always. Yes, yes. Did I miss something?
Not really.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all, no.
And we are back with some great questions about Jackson Pollock from Alan Ira of Woodland Hills, California. Thanks a lot, Alan, for sending these in. We'll see how many we can plow through. I think you've already humbled us on question number one, so as a lot of my students do, they just sort of close the exam and go to sleep and wait for time to be called. What did Jackson Pollock's father do for a living? when he worked for the government. Hint, his father's profession purportedly influenced his art.
He threw things.
Painted aircraft.
No.
Painted ships.
No. He was a land surveyor for the federal government. Huh. And Jackson would go with his father on these trips in the Southwest. He experienced vast American landscape and Indian culture, which, of course, later influenced his work. So that makes sense. I believe that would be the Department of the Interior.
We knew that.
Okay, sure.
What city and state it was Jackson Pollock born in?
Echo Park, California?
No.
El Paso.
Jackson Hole.
No, well, you know what? I'm giving it to you because he was born in Wyoming, but he was not born in Jackson Hole. He was born in Cody. Cody,
sure.
Wyoming. Dan, do you have a pin for that? Oh, I suppose we don't really have a listener there.
I have a pin I just can't reach.
Yeah, it's okay. Okay, which gallery held the first one-man exhibit of Jackson Pollock's work in 1943? Let's say, what city is it in?
New York.
Guess that. New York, yes. Art of this Century was the name of the exhibition. That makes perfect sense. Very straightforward.
Was it at MoMA?
You know, it doesn't say. The gallery was in New York, but owned by Peggy Guggenheim, is what it says here.
Mm. Oh.
Alan is always very, very careful without giving too much away. I can tell you every single one of his questions is cross-referenced with a web address, so we can look up and verify, because, of course, everything Wikipedia on the internet is true. Which artist did Jackson Pollock study under while attending the Students League in New York? We have an artist at the table.
No
pressure.
None whatsoever.
It's a three part name. THB are the initials.
THB?
THB are the initials. It says here Thomas Hart Benton.
Okay.
He was a writer.
Got it.
No, he was a painter.
You knew it, Dave. Yep. You're doing good.
No, not really.
Which of the following tools did Pollock use to apply paint to canvases? Sticks.
Yes.
Knives.
Yes.
Towels. Sure. Meat basters.
I think the towels is the only one that's not right.
I'm going with all of the above.
All of the above is the correct response. All of them? Yes. Meat basters. That's that takes special.
Yeah, you can splatter stuff with a meat baster.
Yeah, sure you can. Absolutely.
Among other things.
Yeah. Make it look like the American Southwest. Name the actor who played Howard Putzel in the motion picture Pollock, circa 2000. Did anybody see the movie?
Well, Ed Harris played him, but I don't know who else was in the movie.
I don't remember anything else about it.
Into the movie.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Putzel was an advisor to Guggenheim and convinced her to commission his works.
Who
played that? Initials BC. I've never heard of this actor before. That pretty much narrows it down.
Oh, man.
It was Bud Cort was his
name. Oh, he was in Harold and Maude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. To treat his depression and alcoholism, what type of psychotherapy did Jackson Pollock receive from 1938 to 1942?
Electroshock.
That's what I was going to guess.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been, but they're looking for sort of an overarching term of a kind of therapy.
Tickle therapy?
No. It was that one that was so popular in the 70s. Est.
Something that hurts therapy.
Happy kitten therapy.
Happy kitten
therapy. You get to sit with lots of kittens.
Hey, don't laugh. That's what CCS did the last couple weeks of finals. They brought in puppies.
That's right.
You brought puppies in?
They brought the student life office brought in
I didn't know you needed a puppy.
They brought them on the second floor right underneath my class.
Hmm.
Oh, what's the smell?
That's what Pollock needed, puppies.
Wow. Yeah. Would have helped him out.
No, he would have killed him, I think.
Yeah.
Or splattered him on a...
Or used him as a...
Somebody's album titled Psychotherapy. To treat his depression and alcoholism, what type of psychotherapy did Jackson Pollock receive from 1938 to 1942? It was Jungian. Of course it was Jungian. Everything had to be...
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
You said Freudian, you may have also been incorrect. Which fictional character did Pollock name his dog after? He had a poodle with a very interesting name.
Poodle.
Kind of a tragic, classical literature character. If they tell you the author of the book, it's going to give it away.
Heathcliff?
Hamlet?
No, not Hamlet. No.
Beth Older?
It was a Melville book.
Moby Dick.
Yeah, but he didn't name the dog Moby Dick. He named him...
Ishmael.
No.
What?
Captain Ahab was the name of the
poodle. Captain Ahab.
Poodle. Okay. I was named
Captain Ahab.
I was going to go Billy Bud.
I think Captain Ahab.
I'm sorry, professors, I cannot help myself looking at some of the URLs to the source of these questions. 2011/50-things-you-didn't-know Jackson-Pollock.
Well, at least it wasn't Billy Budd. That would have said
that's
something
what
about
I thought
the,
was
the
be.
Fate of the poodle.
Yes, yes. Pollock claimed true art came from, multiple choice, A, the United States, B, intoxication, C, painting figures.
B.
Apparently it was D, none of these. Pollock said true art only comes from the human unconscious.
Sure.
Oh, how Jungian. It rubbed off.
I can see you guys are really getting into these questions.
Name probably the artist. Collective unconscious, too.
Wow. Name the artist that Jackson Pollock married.
Oh, it's not a multiple choice. No.
We all waited.
All the photographer. I'm trying to remember.
Initials Lee. I blew it. Yeah, first name was Lee. Last name started with the letter K. Give it a whirl. Lee Krasner is what it says here.
Lee, of course.
Yes.
The tip of my tongue.
Which art movement is Pollock most associated with? Artist Chow?
Impressionism? No. Abstract
expressionism is what it says here. I don't know how we're supposed to sort of solidify
with
that.
Lots those of kind thoughts. Of,
you know, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So there's abstract expressionism. What kind of abstract movements are there? And how would I know if it was abstract expressionism?
I don't know.
Abstract. like I said, this is. I get abstract.
I'm the cartoonist buff. My wife's a fine art painter.
It's really more abstract explosivism. Yeah. I mean, to look at his canvas.
Yeah, I know.
Just sort of fling one color after another.
No, there's actually a mathematical formula for it, too, believe it or not.
There is?
What? Yeah. There's a golden rule to the way he actually laid down paint.
Wow.
How many swipes?
There's actually a formula for it. That they can actually determine a fake Jackson Pollock from a room.
Oh, by how many swipes?
No way.
Wow.
That's too cool.
That's genius.
That wasn't one of the questions.
Yeah, but that's about all that I know about it.
I have to say some of the results look good.
Yeah,
but
it looks totally random.
It would be like making sausage made, I think.
Sausage making?
Please, I hope the Pollock fans are in here.
Now, Jim, I think you already alluded to this. Let's see if you can sort of match what we're looking for here. The name of the painting technique that Pollock supposedly created. Because I think that we've heard about
explosive
sort of things.
Spatter?
Here.
Spatter. You know?
Yeah, it says drip is what it's called. Drip painting.
No, it was more explosive than that.
More explosive than
that. It was fling.
In November 2006, one of Pollock's paintings was auctioned for $140 million, making it one of the most expensive paintings in the world. Do you know the title of the painting? I mean, this is recent history.
Pay to the order of...
what year was this?
2006.
Wow. $140 million.
I'll give you a hint. It was painted in 1948.
Wow.
That's interest.
Helpful. Yeah. Is it about, does it relate to...
1948 is good enough. It was called Number 5, 1948.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
One of those kind
Very
of artists.
Impressive.
I call it
Unger.
I'm trying to figure out what he was doing besides giving us the answer.
Jim's seen the movie, so this probably will help.
No,
you,
I haven't.
Oh, I'm sorry, you haven't. You just remembered that Ed Harris played it. How did he die? How did Pollock die?
Oh, he's dead?
Yes.
Was it alcohol?
Drug overdose?
Alcohol was involved. He was driving while intoxicated and killed himself, unfortunately. So with that, you know, very positive note, we'll move on to a new set of questions.
How do we do?
So,
how many did you get right?
We got exactly zero correct.
Don't ask.
We got
except for Dan
ride.
Got the 1948. That was good.
Thank you.
That was good.
I thought we got another
one. We got abstract expressionism.
Yeah, that was good.
I don't think our scorekeeper did a very good job.
Not at all.
We get so many clues that we don't really keep score.
It kind of gates it.
Yeah.
We're in the hole.
Just cheated. It was wrong.
We're in the hole right now.
Dave, your wife is actually a painter?
Yes.
That serves specific
she's a fine art painter.
Media? Okay.
Abstract, too.
So okay, there you go.
She studied that stuff. I didn't.
Opposites attract.
I guess.
That's right.
That's all. I have a set of questions that was submitted by a listener, and I'm terribly embarrassed. There's many of them, and we won't be able to get to them all here, but I will make sure that I double back. The questions are great, and I've lost the cover sheet. My great apologies, person. They're all over the map, just the way we like it. What is the record high number of points scored by a losing team in a National Basketball Association game?
101.
113.
Oh, in NBA?
I will give you this.
I'm going to say 148.
148 is the thing
triple
on the table.
Overtime,
this is December 1983.
Was it the Denver Nuggets, I'm imagining?
It was the Denver Nuggets. Ooh. Lost to the Detroit Pistons.
Ooh.
The highest total scoring game in NBA history. How many points did the losing team get?
148.
Was it over 148.
Wow.
153.
It was 201. Triple overtime. It was greater than 153.
172.
It's higher than 172.
What?
For a losing team? My arms would fall off by then.
204.
A little bit over.
Oh, okay.
The Denver Nuggets lost by scoring 184 points to the Pistons, who scored 186.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
I wish I could have seen that game.
Slightly no defense there.
Probably on you. It's probably
at that point, you're playing a game of horse, aren't you? I mean,
those ticket holders got their money.
Yes. Denver used to have that strategy where they'd run up and down the court and try to tire out their other opponents that didn't play in the elevation.
That was not a random guess that you had, Jason.
We just sat back and let them shoot.
Yep.
Who was on that Pistons team?
1983.
So might have been the early years of the Bad Boys.
John Long, maybe?
I think it was, maybe John Long. Sure. What fashion accessory launched designer Ralph Lauren on his successful career in the clothing business? I've heard of this before, but I'd never really seen it confirmed. I always wondered.
Like neckties?
Yeah, but a special kind of necktie.
Bow tie?
Not tie-dye, not bow tie.
Silk wrap?
Clip on? It wasn't the keyboard tie.
A bolo?
It wasn't the keyboard tie. Not the keyboard tie. Although I keep getting a lot of email about the hot gift is a tie that's got a bottle opener in the middle of it.
Really?
Is that what you're asking for?
Well, no. But it's implying two things. You know, dads only get ties and dads like to drink, bottles. Any ideas what kind of a tie? It says Lauren started his first business, he called it Polo Fashions, in 1968 with this design and $50,000 he got from a loan. It's crazy.
What? Was it like a style of tie?
It was a certain style of a tie.
What, like an ascot? Or a...
No. Said it was very, very wide. That's
a bib?
It.
What?
It was a wide tie.
It was just a wide tie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. That's all.
Okay, sure.
Well, they were big all during the latter half of the 70s, too.
Well, there you go.
Well, actually, all of the 70s.
1968, so he was the man.
Wow.
So he started that.
It was,
they were awfully hard to tie.
Yes.
You had a fat wad of cloth to pull up through the knot.
That's exactly right.
And that's when those double Windsors were popular for tying them.
It was Mugatu that developed the keyboard tie, right?
The keyboard tie. What is Michael J. Fox's middle name?
It doesn't say.
He doesn't have one. It's just an initial.
That's fake, right?
J is just an initial, but his birth given middle name is Andrew. Yes, absolutely. So he made his American television debut in the television film Letters from Frank, credited under the name Michael Fox, intended to continue to use this name, but when he registered with Screen Actors Guild, they said there's another actor named Michael Fox, so he just added the J. Just like all of us will. And it is time for us to say goodbye, Professor Hokett.
Goodbye.
Professor Maggio.
Goodbye.
Professor Manica.
Nice to be here. Bye.
Professor Tubbs.
Sayonara.
Professor Zarkowski.
You are all fabulous.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Roach.
Peace.
And now these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
Email your questions to atp@udmercy.edu. Or you may fax them to 313-993-1166. Attention, Ask the Professor.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and technically directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.